Have you ever wondered why the story of the wedding in Cana, the story of Jesus turning water into wine, is only recorded in the Gospel of John? Ever wonder why Matthew, Mark, and Luke decided to omit it? Do you think there's any possibility that those three Jesus story writers found the story just a little bit insignificant? After all, doesn't the story just talk about how Jesus provided wine for a party? When you look at some of the other miracles that in the stories of Jesus, we find miracles that seem far more significant, like Jesus healing a blind man and making him able to see, Jesus healing a person who was lame and helping them to be able to walk, Jesus casting demons out of people, Jesus raising the dead son of a widow back to life. So often in the Jesus stories, the actions of Jesus make a real positive difference. They turn people's lives around. And yet, one of our first encounters with Jesus in John's Jesus story tells of him providing an abundance of wine to a party where people likely had had a fair bit to drink already. I got to tell you, when I was a teenager, I wasn't invited to those kind of parties. Parties where there was a lot of alcohol. Now, I don't know, probably I wouldn't have felt all that comfortable had I been invited to them anyway, but I never was invited. And I think probably that's because I was kind of considered a little bit like a goody-two-shoes. I wasn't one to kind of push the envelope. In fact, I think there was a part of me that might have even been a little bit judgmental when it came to people who did push the envelope a bit. To me, drinking and being a person of faith really didn't go all that well together. So you can probably imagine my shock horror when I arrived at my seminary in England for my very first year. And as I was meeting with the other people that were on the floor that I was living in the dorm, and one of the first thing people said was, "Let's go down to the pub." I thought, what on earth have I come to? I don't know. I don't know why Matthew, Mark, and Luke didn't include this water into wine story into their stories of Jesus. Perhaps they didn't think it was all that significant. After all, nobody's desperate life was turned around. But for some reason, John did see this story as being significant. And I think it's worth us taking a look at the story in the hope that we might see something of what John saw in the story. John sees that it's so significant, he places it right near the beginning of his Jesus story. And he calls this water into wine thing the first sign of Jesus' glory. So let's take a look at the story today, and I want to use as our title, The Life of the Party. I think to begin with, we may need to clear something up that might help us understand what happened in Cana, how it actually was more significant than we might think it appears at first glance. We may see the story as being somewhat frivolous, but back in Jesus' day, running out of wine at a wedding banquet would have been an absolute disaster. For one thing, it would have been an embarrassment to those who were hosting the party, because they were supposed to be prepared, and it would have brought shame upon them if it turned out that they weren't as prepared as they should have been. Hosts were expected to host. Everything was supposed to be taken care of. If you were to run out of wine, it would have been like saying to your guests, "Well, we didn't really think you were as important enough to fully prepare for you." Another implication of running out of wine was what it would say about the new marriage. Because if you ran out of wine, then it was like saying that that the marriage itself was not going to start off well, that it was actually doomed from the start. So perhaps it's understandable why Mary is concerned when she discovers that the hosts have run out of wine. She's concerned for those hosts. She is concerned about what people might think about this new marriage that had just been just taken place before them. But having said that, I still don't think that those are the reasons why John includes this in his Jesus story. I believe there's other significant things that he sees. The first thing I'd like us to focus on is on the incredible contrast between what Jesus' mother says to Jesus and the reality that was present after the servants did what Jesus told them to do. Now, just to refresh your memory, let's go back to the story in verse 3. Jesus, the story goes this, goes like this. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." Now, if we then skip a few verses and we move to verse 7, then John says, "Jesus then said to the servants, 'Fill the jars with water.' So they filled them to the brim." Now, we could let that verse go by without passing, without pausing very much. But I think it's important to point out how big those water jars were. It says in verse 6, "Nearby stood six stone water jars, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons." Those are pretty big water jars. And there were six of them. Now, I did the math that when Jesus turned the wine, even if those water jars were closer to the 20-gallon limit, each of those water jars would provide about 100 bottles of what we have as wine today. And if it was 30 gallons, that would be 150 bottles. So after that miracle of Jesus, there was between 600 and 900 bottles of very good wine made available to those at the party. Now let's go back to the words of Mary. They have run out of wine. There's not enough. We don't have anything else left. You know, so much of the time, so many of us in our daily lives live under this cloud of scarcity. We strive to get more. We want more money. We want more things. We feel as though we don't have enough of this or that. So many of us, so much of the time, live under this cloud of scarcity. When we're feeling low, we think, if only God would show his love to me more. If only God would bless me more. If only this, if only that. So often we don't feel as though we have enough. And yet as we look at our passage today, we see something that's very important. That in Jesus, there is abundance. The water jars were filled to the brim. That's what it said in the story. They were filled to the brim. And in each of those water jars, there contained a huge volume of water that Jesus turned into wine. Now, Mary, she didn't need all that much wine. The people at the wedding banquet didn't need all that much wine. And yet in Jesus, there was abundance. I think that's something that each of us needs to be reminded of daily. That when it comes to the love, grace, and mercy of God, God pours that out upon us abundantly. We heard something similar in our psalm reading for today, didn't we? Listen to what it says in verse 5. Your love, Lord, reaches to the heavens, your faithfulness to the skies. And in verses 7 and 8, how precious is your unfailing love, O God. People take refuge in the shadow of your wings. They feast on the abundance of your house. You give them drink from your rivers of delights. You know, it makes me wonder how often I'm looking for more from God, when in fact I'm just not seeing the abundance that God has already given to me. So I want to ask you, in what way do you focus more on scarcity than on God's abundance? Let's keep going. There's something that caught my attention in this reading this week that I haven't really paid much attention to before. Instead, I've simply kind of glossed over it. And it has to do with the interaction between Jesus and his mother. Now, I got to say, it's very difficult for us to get a sense of tone when simply reading words that are before us. But I have to tell you, if I was to ever address my mom as woman, I doubt that my mom would take to it very kindly. But let's move past that for a moment, because we don't really know the tone. And maybe we lose something in the translation here. Maybe Jesus said that and it was a term of endearment. We don't know. But what I want to focus on more when it comes to their interaction was what followed after Jesus had addressed his mother. Mary had come to Jesus and said, "They have no more wine." And do you remember Jesus' reply? "Woman, why do you involve me? My hour has not yet come." Let's focus on those last few words. "My hour has not yet come." In the past, when I've thought about those words, I've simply taken them to mean, "Don't push me too soon, Mom. This isn't about your timing. This is about my timing." But I'm not so sure that's what Jesus was saying. You see, if you were to look throughout John's Jesus story to other times when Jesus talks about his hour, Jesus is speaking about his death. In John chapter 12, verse 27, Jesus said, "Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour." In John 13, verse 1, it says, "It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father." In John 17, verse 1, it says, "After Jesus said this, he looked toward heaven and prayed, 'Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may glorify you.'" Each time when Jesus uses that word, hour, he was referring to his death. And here at the beginning of his ministry, while he's at a wedding in Cana, Jesus uses that word hour as well. "Woman, why do you involve me? My hour has not yet come." And yet, notice what happens next in the story. After Jesus has said those words to his mother, listen to how John describes it. Mary said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now, whether there was an all-knowing look from Mary to Jesus, we don't know. But for some reason, Mary seems to have a sense that Jesus is going to do something. It's like Mary knows that her request has nothing to do with death, but instead has everything to do with life. Had the host run out of wine, the celebration would have ended, and it would have ended in disgrace. You know, I can just picture now, though, the smiles, the laughter, the exuberant joy being shared by those wedding guests as the wine continued to flow and the celebration could continue. And let's not get hung up whether or not this would have led to the people being drunk. I really don't think that's the point here. I think the point that John wants to make here is that it's not just about the end of life. It's about how you really live in all the time leading up to that final hour. You know, there are people that believe that Jesus came only to die, that the crucifixion, the resurrection was all what it was about. But in John chapter 10, verse 10, Jesus once said, "I have come in order that you might have life, life in all its fullness." You know, I think about all the pondering that we hear of Mary doing in her heart, all that pondering that had taken place up to this point in Jesus' life and her interaction with Jesus. I think it helped her to know that life needs to be lived right here and now. So I want to move on to another question. And I think for this question, we need to put the wine aside for a moment, because it wasn't the wine that really brought life to the party. It was Jesus. And the question is this: what does it mean to you that Jesus came that you might have life in its fullness? And how might you in Jesus live life to its fullness right now? So we've looked at scarcity versus abundance. We've looked at dying versus living. Now I'd like us to look at obligation versus celebration. And to do this, we need to turn back once again to those six stone water jars. We've already considered how their size was important, but of equal significance was what those water jars would have represented to those who were at the wedding celebration. Having such water jars there would not have been out of the ordinary. In fact, the water jars would have been found, similar water jars would have been found in all sorts of places in those days. Why? Because the people practiced ceremonial washing. To the Hebrew people, it was important to be ceremonially clean. They believed that was part of God's expectation of them. So they washed themselves ceremonially many times throughout the day. They washed themselves when they got up in the morning. They washed themselves before and after a meal. They washed themselves before they were about to enter into prayer. They washed themselves many times throughout the day. Being clean before God was very important to them. Washing themselves was something that was very much a part of their practice. So picture, if you will, the six large stone water jars at that wedding in Cana. All the people who were at that party and who had arrived to that celebration, they'd already used water from those water jars so they would be ceremonially clean. It was part of their practice. It was part of their custom. It was something that was expected of them. It was a practice that they were obligated to follow. Isn't it interesting how Jesus used those six stone water jars? The only ceremonial water jars that were there, and he uses them to provide the wine for the rest of the party. I mean, think about it for a moment. Jesus didn't need to use those water jars. If Jesus could have done a miracle like this one that he did in Cana, couldn't he have used something else to hold the wine? If he could turn water into wine, couldn't he simply have just said the word and had the containers that had the original wine refilled by this new wine that he made? Sure, he could have. But the significant thing here to note is that he didn't do that. He didn't use any other containers, but instead used the water jars that were used in the ceremonial cleaning. I think in using those containers, Jesus was being very deliberate. And I think he was trying to switch gears from obligation to celebration. The water ritual was just that. It was a ritual. Something that people carried out as an obligatory act. Something that people were expected to practice. But relationship with Jesus isn't about obligation. It's about living in the abundance of God's love and grace, living life in an attitude of celebration. Jesus wasn't just somebody at a party. Jesus was the life of the party. I believe that when our relationship with Jesus focuses more on obligation, I think we're in danger of that relationship dying completely. As disciples of Jesus, we need to be focusing on practices that nurture our relationship, celebrating how God has called us in Jesus and how God is now calling us to take one more step with him. As Jesus turned water into wine, we see him turning away from obligation and towards celebration. So I want to ask you, in what way might your relationship with Jesus be one more of obligation as opposed to one of celebration? And what do you hear God saying to you about that today? Very briefly, one more thing. I think it's important to notice what happened between the time when Mary spoke to Jesus and when the master of the banquet tasted the water that had become wine. In that in-between time, Jesus used the assistance of others. Now, just to be clear, Jesus could have filled up the water jars all by himself. Sure, they were large, but if Jesus could later on raise Lazarus from the dead, after he'd been dead for 4 days, Jesus could have filled up the water and changed it into wine and done it without any help from anybody. Jesus could have done that, but again, it's important to note that he didn't. Instead, we're told that Jesus got some servants to help him. They were asked to fill the water jars. They were asked to draw some and take it to the master so that he could taste that water that had been turned into wine. Here we see the difference between spectators and partners. Spectators, they just stand around and watch what's happening. They sit around and let others do all the heavy lifting. However, partners have a role to play. Their partnership is needed for something to become a reality. I believe here that we need to recognize that we are those servants. We are the ones who are called to partner with Jesus in the action that Jesus is doing in the world. We are the ones who are to draw from the water jars that others might taste and see that the Lord is good. We are the ones who are to be living in such a way that others might come to know the grace, love, and mercy of Jesus. We're called to be partners of him. So that leads us to, to one final question. In what way might Jesus say that you are being more a spectator when it comes to his work and mission? And what might Jesus be calling you to do that you might become more of a partner? The wedding in Cana, perhaps, is a somewhat surprising story to see in the scriptures. And yet upon closer look, it's a story that is so full of meaning. In it, we see the contrast between scarcity and abundance, between dying versus living, between obligation versus celebration, between being spectators and being partners. May we lean into and live into this story in our lives, that others might discover for themselves that Jesus really is the life of the party. Let's bow our heads. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your love for us. We thank you that you provide us with an abundance. You keep on giving and giving and giving. Help us to recognize that abundance. We thank you that you call us to live in the here and now. Help us to do that. Help our lives to be a reflection of that living in you. Lord, help us to move away from obligation and towards celebration. And Lord, help us to become your partners in the mission work that you are doing in the world. All these things we ask in the precious name of Jesus. Amen.